counting flowers on the wall. That don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. Text us and we will respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Coming up in about an hour, we'll talk to April Murray Fogel, fan favorite here on the Jeff Moore Show. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, a day early this week, but we have matters to tend to far, far away from the Fairhope Bureau tomorrow. Joining us now, his return to the Jeff Moore Show. It has been a while, but he's a consultant up in Washington, D.C., but Will Hampson joins us on the line. Will, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, doing great. Wish you would have told me I had to warm up for fan favorite and returning champion, but we'll see what we can do.
You got a lot of work to do here as you call in from your submarine, but we appreciate you coming on. Hey, government shutdown, is it all zoo animals and butterflies and happiness spread throughout the district this morning?
Yeah, a little bit of, I think, lingering resentment. The House and the Senate obviously don't love having to involve each other in these processes. The House feels like the Senate was unable to kind of get it together. The Senate feels like they wheel and deal and make these incredible deals, and the country should be, you know, on their hands and knees thanking them. And so I think you got a little bit of lingering resentment between House Republicans and Senate Republicans for sure. But overwhelmingly, I think everyone is glad to get this done and get back to work.
The one thing I saw with the House and the Senate, the $500,000 sort of settlement, and Tommy Tuberville would, I guess, qualify if you were spied on by the Biden administration. And we saw a lot of pushback kind of late in this process on that. But it looks like that wasn't big enough of an issue for Republicans to object to.
There were a couple things. There was also a hemp provision that a lot of Republicans were not super thrilled with. But yeah, I mean, there are some promises that there are going to be votes to take some of these things out. Lindsey Graham in the Senate is really the one pushing it. And he came out, I think, yesterday and said, oh, I'm going to sue, and I'm going to sue for a lot more than, you know, $500,000 or $1 million, which, you know, to me personally is insane that Lindsey Graham would sue us, the taxpayer, for the actions of the DOJ. I mean, it's not our fault. We shouldn't have to be on the hook for that. And I will tell you also that Lindsey Graham is doing fine without the $500,000 or $1 million or whatever he wants to get. So definitely some things I think that the House in particular wants to clean up from the Senate bill. But to your point, it was not a big enough sticking point for them to say, we're going to fight this right now. And I think good on House Republicans to say, look, this deal was not perfect. I think Donald Trump understands this deal was not perfect. House Republicans certainly understand that the Senate put a lot of things in there that make this deal a lot more favorable to Democrats. But at the end of the day, the government is open and we can kind of take care of things from there is, I think, going to be the plan moving forward.
How lame is the effort to go from taking an L on the shutdown to Epstein all the time? Because I don't think anybody cares, you know, or they do, very few. But the way the Democrats are trying to do this, all right, it's time to move on. Nothing to see on the shutdown. We're going to talk about Epstein. And, you know, it just feels so much astroturfed.
Yeah, I mean, again, these are the same Democrats who for years, while Joe Biden was president, told you that there was nothing there, that this was not worth talking about. And now, obviously, those roles have been reversed. And now we're seeing leaks and documents come out and all of the things that, you know, were sitting there on Merrick Garland's desk for 4 years that could have come out at any time. Of course, now that that Donald Trump is president, we're starting to see them trickle through. So, of course, I think the American people understand that two things can be true, Jeff. First of all, this is being used as a distraction. It's being leaked at certain times to try and present the most damage to the Trump agenda. Whenever he's trying to get something done, you see Epstein pop up again. That's absolutely true. But at the same time, I think it is something that the American people overwhelmingly want answers on. And so there should be a process for it. Things seem to be moving forward. And again, it's just interesting how you have an entire party that did not want to talk about this and many things, many other things that we could not talk about for 4 years under Joe Biden, all of a sudden are fair game again when they're leaked.
Well, I'm just very, intrigued by the, not so much the Epstein. I mean, we can argue about that until we're blue in the face and no one, I mean, nothing really changes. The tactic here that, okay, the government reopens on, or they make the deal on Sunday, Monday rolls around, and then they assess the situation, and the Democratic base is mad, and then, you know, you're supposed to take on the big bad orange man and not enable him in any sort of way. And then by Tuesday, it's all Epstein all the time. And I, you know, it's like, okay, guys, like, if you don't see what's going on here, the selective leak by the House Oversight Dems on this, and not so much that, just how the media in some of these, like, left-wing AstroTurf sites out there are trying to manufacture this and make this stick in the news cycle. It's just, I don't think it's going to work. It just seems like an old tactic that maybe the media pre-2024 election might have gotten away with at best. But right now, it's not going to work because it's very tenuous anyway if you're trying to tie Trump to any of this.
Yeah, and I think you look at the content that's coming out, and I personally think it's actually good for Donald Trump. I mean, you had someone who is supposed to be Donald Trump's best friend that he was in on all of this with. He knew exactly what was going on. Meanwhile, these emails show that Epstein was trying to manipulate and play Trump, and, you know, does not seem to suggest that these were, you know, just two buddies going off to the island, hanging out, having a good time. And so, but I will say the other thing, Jeff, and it is something that I respect about Democrats. Democrats do have a more innate sense of where their voters are. And I think you can see it because they know when they're getting rolled and they know when they have to kind of come back and try and manipulate their voters. Republicans will get rolled, frankly, all the time and have no idea that their base of voters are upset by that. Democrats, at least, are willing to try something. They're willing to say, hey, I mean, we know that our base is going to be very upset by us getting steamrolled by Donald Trump again. Let's at least try something. And so, you know, will it work? No, because they've tried this playbook for far, far too many times. And the there is not there. I think we're seeing that as we continue to go through these documents. But they're going to keep trying because they understand that they got steamrolled and they got to do something to distract their voters.
The Democratic Party right now, I think that the establishment sort of won out here. My take on the Democratic Party is I think short term will inevitably the midterms will go for Democrats. I mean, the margins are so thin in the House, and last Tuesday showed that there's more enthusiasm. You know, not that Democrats won four blue states, but by the margins, I think, is particularly Virginia House of Delegates expanding the majority there, and then the margin in New Jersey that we were told that could be competitive, and it turned out not to be at all. And so I do really believe in 26 Democrats, November 26th, they will have a good night and they'll probably get the House, but that's how it always is. History will prevail. But they got problems beyond that because you look at the Democratic base has sort of runs the party. And you start looking at like presidential primaries and the Iowa caucuses and, you know, your New Hampshire and then so on and so forth. And the way it looks to me is you're going to see it's going to be like a George McGovern sort of phenomenon. Are they going to go far left? And that far left, whoever that is, unless the superdelegates and the establishment intervene, but let's assume that they finally have a competitive primary that's long overdue. and they're going to nominate someone who's just totally unelectable.
And here's always been the fear, Jeff, and this is where Democrats have tried to manipulate their process for a long time, is that they have tried to make sure that whoever comes out of their primary is as unscathed as possible. They do not want to bloody each other up and effectively air their own dirty laundry for Republicans to go out and use in a general election. But the question is, who is the front runner? Who is the leader of the Democratic Party right now? It's not Chuck Schumer, because we understand that if AOC were to primary him in that New York Senate race, she would beat him. So it's not Chuck Schumer. It's not, you know, Joe Biden obviously is gone. Kamala Harris suffered a humiliating defeat to Donald Trump. Like, who is out there as the voice of reason here? And so I think that's a big fear for Democrats also, is that things have never been this wide open in a long, long time. I mean, when Barack Obama jumped in 2007, that was over pretty quick. Hillary Clinton, obviously, they made sure to get Bernie Sanders away. And make sure that she was the nominee. You have not had a true kind of open primary process for Democrats in a long time, and you're starting to see it. You're starting to see them head to New Hampshire. You're starting to see them head to Iowa. They are acutely aware that someone has to take that next step forward. And the question is going to become, who is able to kind of step out into the forefront and not only set themselves up to be, kind of the front runner for 2028, but that person also will decide the direction of the Democrats in Congress for the next couple of years here. And so I think everyone's kind of waiting to see which voices are kind of able to separate themselves from the pack. But that, I think, is going to be the big decider on how hard Democrats are willing to go in the next couple of years.
Well, see, and I think there's some truth to that. Now, I would argue 08 was a little more competitive than anything else we've seen. But the fix was in. You're absolutely right about 2016. They're doing Democrat debates at like 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday. They're doing, and then Biden, like out of nowhere, wins in 2020. And then they just sort of decide they're going to anoint Kamala Harris, and then I think maybe there was a fix in there that might have been the plan B, but you know they were never going to leave it up to the Democrat base to determine the party standard bearer. They were never going to do that, and they did not really, they don't trust their own voters. But at some point, they're going to have to do this, and I think it will be a circular firing squad situation. I don't know that they can hold that off much longer. There's so much enthusiasm on the left for election politics. And the problem is it's a big number, but it's not a big number relative to the entire voting public that's going to pick their nominee.
And Jeff, imagine, put this in terms of Republicans and Donald Trump, right? I mean, think about if in 2016, the Republican establishment had come together and said, you know what, guys, this Donald Trump guy is good, all is well, but we're going to kind of make sure that the fix is in and make sure that John Kasich gets the nomination. And then he loses. And Trump says, you know what, I'm going to try and come back. And the next time around, they go, no, guys, we're going to give it to Kevin McCarthy. Or there would be full on revolt and civil war in the Republican Party. And I think you're to that point for Democrats, where they have had people that they love. They've had the Bernie Sanders of the party, and they have been time and time again kicked to the curb. I don't think Democrats are willing to take it anymore. And I think you pushed it off long enough. And unfortunately, they continued to misinterpret the strength of Donald Trump, because they continue to think, if we could just get a normal, decent candidate like a Hillary Clinton or a Kamala Harris, we can beat Donald Trump. And obviously, we've seen how wrong they are. But I think it's time to pay the piper for Democrats. And whatever that means, we'll see. But I just don't think that base is going to continue to take it anymore. And I think that's dangerous for their party. But it is what it is. They've
held it off.
Pay the piper.
Yeah, they've held it off for a real long time. And you got to give it to them. I mean, they held it off for almost 20 years, or more than 20 years now. And at some point, they got to have this. It's healthy for their party. Republicans have only done it twice since the Democrats have last had a real knockdown, drag out fight about, you know, ideologies and principles. And in the end, MAGA won. And, you know, now here we are sitting, you know, a few years later, 12 years later, and they've won two presidential elections, right? You know, the went from Tea Party, and then you sort of had that fight, and then the Tea Party gave way to MAGA, which there was a fight even, I mean, you know, the Ted Cruz versus Donald Trump primary. So I do believe at some point, I don't know what this, how this movement will manifest itself. I don't know that they, you know, we talk about, well, who is the Democrat heir apparent, but who has the chops on the far left? It's not like a Bernie Sanders. He's too old. AOC isn't taken seriously. But somebody, if they come along, that comes off as credible to enough of people in the public that runs on the far left platform, I don't know who that is, but surely they got somebody in the stable. And that we're going to have this, like, sort of Rahm Emanuel, Gavin Newsom, whoever else gets in. And then you're going to have that one candidate that everybody's going to be like, man, you know, sort of like what Howard Dean was a while back.
Jeff, remember this, and your friend Feinbaum and A.G. McCarron and Coach Tuberville will tell you, just win, baby. If you win, it takes care of everything, and when you lose, there are a lot of problems and a lot of people to blame, and that is the Democrats' problem at the end of the day, is that Donald Trump keeps winning, and they just can't figure out a way to beat him. And so until they start winning, there are going to be issues, but winning solves everything, Jeff.
Will Fussell to Fighting Online, how can they do so?
The Will Hampson.
The Will Hampson, that's on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Will, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
History, they're cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.